Ahoy, Mets fans. Welcome back to Amazing Avenue Audio, the show. My name is Brian. With me, as always, is Chris. And Chris, we are recording this a little bit late this week due to some traveling I was doing. But we are recording this at the end of the Brewers series, where the Mets took 2 of 3 from the Brewers, making them 7 and 6 over this stretch that was supposed to be this incredibly difficult stretch with the West Coast road trip and then coming back against the Brewers, who are a pretty good team this year. But the Mets are still in first place by 4.5 games. They are now 21 games over, sorry, 19 games over 500. And I'm still feeling pretty good about the state of the Mets. Let's start off with your general thoughts. How are you feeling about the state of the Mets this morning?
Yeah, still good. Still very happy to be rooting for the team with the best record in the National League. Not letting myself get too concerned with what the Braves have done. I mean, it's an impressive winning streak. Can't really deny that. But as I tweeted out from the Amazing Avenue account last night, they've won 14 games in a row, and they're still 4.5 games back in the division. I know that is still an exciting thing for a team, but deep down somewhere, it's got to be frustrating that you've played that well. The Mets have had tough opponents, or tougher opponents at the very least, and that's still a somewhat significant gap. And I think we just have to, as Mets fans, remind ourselves that this team has done this with no Jacob deGrom, with Max Scherzer having missed a few weeks now, even though it sounds like he's getting relatively close to coming back. And they've done it with a variety of issues that maybe would have tanked a previous Mets team last year or in recent years. We've seen that happen. So, but yeah, look, this is – you can only control what your team is doing. As a fan, you can't control anything, but if you want to act like we're in control of what the Mets are doing, that's all you can really worry about. And they won a series against the Brewers. They won a series against the Angels. But this whole stretch, we already talked about it last week, but they split the series with the Dodgers. They lost the series to the Padres. They haven't had many series losses this season, and to have one in San Diego in the midst of that trip, a trip that ended with a nice win in Anaheim, one that I think Edwin Diaz, I mean, he's just been phenomenal, but that 5-out save that he got where all the outs were strikeouts and one of them was of Mike Trout.
Yep.
That is the guy that the Mets traded for, and one we did not see in his first full season with the Mets. But really, he's been pretty good in, over the last couple of years coming into this one. And then this year, this is again that guy. So he helps a lot to have somebody who is that dominant as your closer, backing up a team that is capable of scoring runs, capable of coming back, and has gotten solid starting pitching despite the absences. If you look over the last month, I don't think the Mets lead the league in ERA or anything, but they've been doing more than enough to keep it together. And that's all you can ask for. I know they've got 4 games with the Astros coming up over the next couple of weeks, 2 at a time. But they got a lot of games against the Marlins. And again, we've touched on this. The schedule gets significantly lighter with a lot of games against the Rangers, Reds, more against the Marlins. The Cubs, and they get 3 against the Braves in mid-July. That's not, that far away. And I will start to worry about the Braves if the Braves start beating the Mets in series, and they have a lot of them left. But for right now, if the Mets had been 2-8 and the Braves had won 14 in a row, and the Braves now had a – forgive me for not doing the math ahead of time, but like a 2-game lead in the division, I'd be like, oh, yep, nope, that's bad.
Yeah.
I'm a little concerned, but You know, the Mets record in the last 10 games has been good. So, yeah.
Yeah.
Nothing wrong with enjoying it. And if you can't enjoy when your sports team is in first place and doing well, I don't know. Like, what's the point of sports?
Yeah. I also want to point out that when you're looking at the games the Mets and the Braves have played, the Mets are 25-15 above teams over 500. They're 10 games over 500 against good teams. The Braves are 12-14 against teams over 500. And I know that doesn't tell the whole story, but part of this narrative of the Braves being on this incredible hot streak is you have to acknowledge that part of that is they're beating up teams that aren't that good. And look, I will never get mad at a team for beating teams that are worse than them. That is exactly what your baseball team is supposed to do. But they beat the Nationals, they beat the Pirates, they beat the A's, they beat the Rockies, and they beat the Diamondbacks. That is who their streak is against. And did they even beat the Diamondbacks? Yes, their winning streak started with the last game of the Diamondback series. So, yeah. You know, those teams are not fantastic baseball teams. That's not taking away from what they did. What they did is impressive, and the Braves are a better team than they were the first 2 months of the season, and I think everybody knows that. But when they're starting to play, next week they have the Dodgers and the Giants. That will be a big test for that team. If they can sweep those series, well, then I'll be impressed. They have the Cardinals the first full week of July. If they can sweep the Cardinals in a four-game series, then I'll be impressed. But, you know, I'm not convinced that the Braves are this unstoppable team. They're playing excellent baseball right now, and I'm not taking anything away from them except to just highlight that maybe this doesn't mean they're the greatest team in baseball history.
Right. Yeah, and when they have that tougher stretch against those teams, the teams that the Mets have held their own against, the Cardinals, Dodgers, Giants, and Padres, overall, the Mets have been right there in most of those games. I know there's been a blowout loss or two. But, yeah, the Mets have that opportunity. They're going to be playing the Rangers, Reds, Marlins. You know, I know I'm repeating myself, but they get to do that while the Braves are playing those tougher teams.
Right.
I mean, there are other series the rest of the way from the Mets that are tough. Obviously, the Yankees are playing out of this world right now.
Yes.
And the Mets, thanks to Major League Baseball's obsession with the Subway Series, have to play them every year. But, you know, it's two games in July, two in August. But you really look at the rest of their schedule, and there's not too many stretches that are tough. You know, they get the Dodgers coming into town in late August, but that's followed up by the Nationals, Pirates, Marlins, and Cubs, and Pirates.
Right.
Yeah, you know, right. It's split between home and on the road. You get closer toward the end of the regular season, they get three against the A's, who probably only figure to get worse, if whether it's innings limits, injuries, trades of any trades, valuable piece that they still have left. However much you could deplete a team like the A's right now, they might be somewhat depleted. So, there's no guarantees. We know strange things happen in baseball. But I'm still pretty confident the Mets will win the division. And I feel like the worst case scenario that's in within a realistic realm of possibility would be not winning the division, but still making the playoffs.
I'm going to reserve that optimism for a little bit later in the season, only because I know pain in my life. I don't want to know more pain in my life. But no, I think that's, you know, there's nothing illogical about what you've said there. I just can't wait for the Mets to have this lighter part of the season come up, just because I'm tired of this Braves narrative is what it comes down to.
Right.
You know, it's going to be really – first of all, like, playing the National League Central, aside from playing the Cardinals and the Brewers, is pretty much just a a laughable. I mean, think about how bad the Cubs and the Reds have to be that they are below the Pirates with a negative 101 run differential. I mean, come on.
Yeah.
That's just, I mean, the Cubs have lost 10 in a row. And that's the thing. The Braves are playing the Cubs this weekend. So,
yeah.
It's going to be, you know, they're going to be fine for a couple of games, but that's okay. Anyway, we should talk about Tyler McGill, who left the game last night with a shoulder injury in the fourth inning. I was at an event I'll be talking about in my music rec, so I won't talk about it right now. But you're watching the game, Chris. How badly hurt did McGill seem to you?
I mean, it didn't look great. Anytime a pitcher throws a pitch and the velocity is down and they kind of show discomfort in their arm immediately, that's not what you want to see. Knowing the way this podcast goes, sometime today, I'm sure there will be an update, probably closer to first pitch of the game tonight, on how his MRI looked on his shoulder. Obviously, I hope he's relatively okay. I hope maybe something with the biceps tendonitis that he had dealt with just sort of flared up, and maybe he has to rest a little bit longer before the next time he comes back. My reaction in the moment wasn't like, oh no, it's the end of the world. I do think, as impressive as he's been for stretches, I don't think his absence for, let's hope, a few weeks, you know, but I don't think his absence rises to the level, even though he did a fantastic job for several starts filling in,
yes,
in Jacob deGrom's spot in the rotation. I do think he's just a little more replaceable, is too harsh of a word, but it's a little easier to fill in for McGill, I think, than some of the other names that are either on the IL already or, you know, rotation mates of his.
I mean, McGill was only back for a start and a half, too.
Yeah.
The Mets have been doing this without him for the last month.
Yeah. Yeah. So it's like, I'm not super excited about Trevor Williams and David Peterson. And I think since we last recorded, David Peterson made us look bad when he was pitching in relief and also bad again when he started. With our preferences on the roll, it was just like, oh yeah, good relief outing, bad start. Yep, that's exactly the opposite of what we said we would prefer. Of course it is. But what concerns me more is not so much one of those two guys filling in for McGill. It's just until Scherzer is actually back. Okay, now we're one even minor injury away from really going, oh, all right, there's not a major league ready option to step in and take those starts. So if all the other pitchers in the rotation currently in McGill's absence could please just stay healthy, that would be nice, at least until Scherzer is back. But we saw Zapucki, oh man, I can spell his name better than I just said it. Zapucki. we saw him not look up to that challenge in the one start that he had this year. And then you can roll the dice on other guys who are in the minors, but there's not somebody who is highly regarded and knocking on the door.
Right.
Granted, McGill himself wasn't highly regarded or doing that before he got his shot the first time he came up to the big leagues. But that is still a relatively rare occurrence. So yeah, we'll see. I hope Max Scherzer is feeling great. I hope McGill is not seriously hurt and it's just a little more time off. But pitching tends to do this. Every time it looks like you're about to have too much of it for the roles you have, it kind of reminds you that it puts a lot of strain on these guys' arms, and that's just and their whole body, and that's just what happens. But yeah. So yeah, I hope everybody's okay. I think the Mets can more than stay afloat. That was something that going into the West Coast trip, I think people were worried about a horrendous road trip. And even going back to when Scherzer hit the IL, there were concerns about what the Mets would look like. Hey, just keep things where they are. And I remember at the time being like, no, let's hope for a little bit more than that. And they have. They've gotten more games over 500 since then. They've maintained a very good winning percentage. They're still on pace for, 105, 104 wins, I think.
Something like that, yeah.
Handy dandy calculator, 105.
And I also think that that's probably, although, you know, realistic, the one thing I will say is that the Mets have not been streaky at all this season, and there's probably a losing streak coming for them at some point. And so that might get knocked down a little bit, but there's also probably a winning streak coming for them at some point. So, you know, I think 100 wins is where I am sort of cautiously optimistically projecting the Mets to be. Between 98 and 102 wins is sort of where I feel is it's likely to happen. Had the Mets still not lost three games in a row?
Yeah, I believe that is true.
Yeah, that's crazy. I mean,
yeah, you do that. And that's the other thing too, right? When even if you want to fixate on the Braves, we know how those series go. To really gain ground on a team, you have to sweep them.
Yep.
And look, there's a 5-game series in the first weekend of August. That can be taxing in a number of ways. But in a standard series of 3 games, if you lose one of them, you know, you prefer to win 2 out of 3, but you also haven't completely closed a gap. The Braves are the ones who should feel like they have a tough task ahead of them right now, not the Mets, in my opinion.
Yeah, I agree with that. As we are heading into the end of June, are there any players, pleasant surprises you want to talk about before we wrap up for today?
No, nothing that I don't think is obvious already from the playing field. I will say, give an extra little shout out. Mark Canha has tweeted twice this week, looking forward to the Mets Pride Night celebration tonight. And, you know, there were major league players this season who ripped pride patches off their jersey in Tampa Bay earlier this month. So it is nice to see a Mets player who is vocally supportive of a no-brainer event to support. Mark Canha seems like a good egg. And it's nice to have him on the team, and it's nice that he's been playing good baseball and, being a good person, a supportive ally as somebody who's on the team. You don't get that every day in baseball or sports in general. So, yeah, I don't know. Mark Canha, we appreciate that.
Yes, absolutely. So my sort of pleasant surprise comes about in a backhanded way, which is that I am pleasantly surprised at the Mets bullpen, given how up and down Seth Lugo has been this year. I think myself, like lots of people, felt like if Lugo was going to have a bad season, the Mets bullpen would probably be having a bad season as well. And the Mets bullpen has not been fantastic by any means. I mean, it has been in stretches, but it certainly hasn't been as volatile as you'd think it would have been based on the performance we've gotten from Lugo, which has been very up and down. You know, he has an ERA at 3.25 right now, which is not a bad place to be necessarily for a reliever, but he's also had some stretches where he has looked pedestrian at best, to borrow a phrase from our friend Courtney Barnett.
Yes. And,
he's the type of guy who I think all of us have been counting on him to be a rock solid piece of this bullpen. And the fact that he has struggled a little bit and the Mets bullpen hasn't imploded, that's an excellent thing. So that is my celebration, just of the Mets bullpen being perfectly cromulent most of the time.
Yeah. Yeah, no.
More of that, please.
Yeah, no, and it's been nice that churn of relievers who maybe didn't instill the most confidence has held up okay so far. I think it's still an area that should be bolstered, but It is nice to see. And one other note, again, maybe we'll get an update like right after this goes up. But all we know is that Eduardo Escobar had an issue that seemingly might be a medical issue that wasn't related to baseball. It wasn't available last night, and Buck Showalter couldn't really say much about it when he was asked. So he's been a big source of joy on the field, and whatever the off-field situation is, hopefully he's okay. And his family is okay. You know, we just haven't really learned what exactly was going on, but it would be nice to see him back in the dugout and playing soon. Assuming all is, you know, resolved.
Yes. Well said. All right, Chris, what is your music recommendation for this week?
So I had a feeling it was going to be a good lineup. But the Desert Days lineup this year is, I think you had said it, like it looked like it was made for me, for yes. us.
Yes, it appeared that you made the lineup. Yeah.
There's like, I mean, the absolute dream version of this lineup would only, it's only missing like two bands that I really wanted. And there's, I don't know, 90 bands on the bill. Like it's just, it's kind of wild. But, I looked, I've already recommended Lonerism by Tame Impala, which will be played in full at this festival, which is awesome. The first time we went to it, Tame Impala played, and then thunderstorms came through in California, which is not something you say every day. Cut their set short, three songs in, and they haven't been able to coordinate and get back since. So that is very cool. King Gizzard's one of the headliners. Everybody who listens to this show knows the recommendations I've made of all their records over the years. But the other headliner is an absolute legend, Iggy Pop. But just what a trio from my perspective and my fandom. And inspired by that, while I would always listen to all three Stooges records first, Iggy made some damn good solo records. And to me, yeah, you know, Lust for Life is the one. Kind of the obvious one. People know the song Lust for Life and The Passenger. I think whether they realize it or not, I mean, there's been points in time that some of those have been like on commercials for things. Like I think Lust for Life was used on like a Royal Caribbean cruise commercial or something like that. And, you know, 18-year-old me would have been like, oh man, why is Iggy letting them use his song? And now I'm like, they get paid. Like you didn't make any money on these songs back, you know, back then, you know, certainly not, commensurate with the level of music you were making. So, it is a really great record. Obviously if you don't know, he had David Bowie as a co-writer for a lot of the songs on it. And it's just, it's a really good, like, it's not heavy, but like, it's like happy music that still rocks pretty hard, in my opinion.
Yeah.
You know, it doesn't sound like raw power, but, but these are just like good, you know, good rock and roll songs with one, maybe the best front person to ever get on stage. Looking forward very much to seeing Iggy. Definitely recommend listening to this record. And, you know, it came out in 1977, but I think it sounds just as current as anything. So there you go. How about you?
So last night I had the pleasure of taking my wife and two kids to see Paul McCartney on the eve of his 80th birthday. Tomorrow, Saturday, is actually his 80th birthday, but it was quite the show. My first concert in 1993 was Paul McCartney at Giant Stadium. My kid's first concert in 2022 was Paul McCartney at MetLife Stadium, which is built in the parking lot of Giant Stadium. It's just a very, very nice symmetry to have going with that. But also, it's Paul fucking McCartney, man. Like, he's the best. He's one of the most significant songwriters of all time. And it was a great show. His voice is not what it used to be. He's talking more during the show. It's kind of giving himself, I think, some time between singing, which is totally fair for a man who will be 80 very, very shortly. And my one gripe about when McCartney plays live in terms of his set list is that he ignores like big chunks of his discography. I don't know if it's because he's not particularly fond of those records or they just don't, you know, necessarily fit sort of the band's configuration, whatever it is. I've talked about my favorite McCartney album, which is Ram, which he never does anything from. I think in part because that is an odd interpretation. Also, Linda, his now deceased wife, sings all over that. So I can't imagine that anybody, and Linda McCartney was not the world's greatest singer by any stretch of the imagination, but she had a very distinct voice. And so I wonder if it's just a matter of, it's hard to replicate that. But the other album that I adore by McCartney that I don't hear people talk about ever is called Chaos and Creation in the Backyard. And this record came out in 2005, and it was the only musician on the record is McCartney, I believe. And it's produced by Nigel Godrich of Radiohead fame. And apparently Godrich's deal with him was like, listen, I'll produce your album, but essentially you have to listen to me. Like if I say something is not good, it's not going on the album. It has to pass Nigel Godrich's standards. And because of that, the record is incredibly strong. McCartney is somebody who I think writes probably two good songs for every bad song. But the problem is, I think he pretty much publishes everything he writes. So every McCartney record usually has some serious dips in it. This record has one song on it that I will say is not for me. And of course, it was the first single because that's just the way these things go. It's actually one of the least listened to songs on the record. That first single is called Promise to You Girl. And it's fine. It's a below average McCartney song, but that makes it a above average for the rest of the world song. But there's four or five songs in this. Song called Too Much Rain that's really beautiful and sad. There's a song called Jenny Wren that seems almost like a sequel to Blackbird. Not in its like, it doesn't sound like that at all, but it's a song with a bird in the title. Song called Ride Into Vanity Fair is really pretty, and that has some nice orchestration on it. The last song on the record before the bonus track is called Anyway, and that's just a beautiful song also. Just a really, really solid McCartney album, and I love it when McCartney drums. I think he's an incredibly underrated drummer. And I think this is the last record he made until the most recent one, McCartney 3, that didn't have his touring band on it. And no disrespect to his touring band, but those guys are all really talented musicians, but maybe they're not the most creative guys in the world. Maybe their parts just aren't as interesting as some of the parts that McCartney himself comes up with. So again, this is a record sort of from McCartney's relative wilderness years. He was married to Heather Mills at this point, about to get divorced. He wasn't the sort of, I mean, McCartney never really goes out of style, right? But he wasn't the sort of, I feel like now when McCartney does anything, the opinion, rightly so, is, thank God we're still getting new McCartney music. Isn't it great he's still doing stuff? At this point, I think more people were kind of saying like, all right, Paul, maybe it's time to retire. But thankfully, he never did. And, you know, he turned 80, but last night, at the end of the show, he said, we'll see you next time. And I sort of believe him that this isn't the end for him, even though when I bought these tickets, I thought this is definitely the end for him because there's no way he can keep doing it at this level after he's 80. But here we are, and who knows? But regardless, from 2005, Chaos and Creation in the Backyard by Paul McCartney, my pick for the week.
So, nice. Good stuff.
Yeah, we're both going with some reasonably classic stuff this week. That's fine. That's good. Anyway, thank you for listening, everybody. We truly appreciate it. Please go to AmazingAvenue.com for all your Mets needs. There's something for everybody there. Game recaps, news, analysis, podcasts, etc. We have a very special podcast going up this weekend. I'm not going to say who's the guest on it, but it's somebody very cool. So look out for that. We should also mention Amazing Avenue is on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram at Amazing Avenue. Chris is on Twitter at Chris McChain. I am on Twitter at Brian Ethanap. And until next time, let's go Mets.